Randy Nesbitt.
Okay, Mrs. Nesbitt, this time, who's going to do Mrs. Nesbitt?
I don't.
No, I haven't.
Okay, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse will conduct your hearing very shortly, sir, so just hold on, and we do need to make a phone call, so if you could hold on, so I'm going to try to make the phone call, and we will move forward with your hearing. Okay.
Hello?
Oh, good morning. It's our understanding you wish to participate in the hearing for your son this morning. This is Arizona Board of Executive Diplomacy. Am I correct, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay, if you hold on, the chair of his hearing will call on you very shortly. Thank you, and just hold on.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Nesbitt, could you please state your name and your ABC number for the record?
Randy Nesbitt, 199-472.
Thank you, and good morning. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a revocation hearing regarding the two allegations listed on your warrant of arrest. And you should have been given a form telling you about this hearing, and I see you signed your form on November 2nd. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And on that form were your hearing rights, and one of your hearing rights is that you could hire a lawyer at your expense to represent you. I don't see a lawyer with you. Are you representing yourself today?
Yes, I wasn't told what my violation was, so I mean, I don't know what these two allegations are that you're talking about.
Okay, well, part of this hearing is I will give them to you, okay? All right, and I'd like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing. You can see us on the video screen. So at the other end of the bench for me is the Honorable Michael Johnson. Right next to him in the center of the bench is our board chair, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, and my name is Gail Rittenhouse. I'll be your panel chairman today for this hearing. Also with us in the room is Mr. Sanders, who's representing the Department of Corrections. There you can see Mr. Sanders now. And he represents Corrections and your parole officer in this hearing. So before we get started, oh, I'm sorry, I should also mention that we have Ms. Carolyn Yanez on the phone as well. And before we get started, I need to swear all three of you in, actually. So Mr. Nesbitt, Ms. Yanez, and Mr. Sanders, do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help God, and do so affirm? Mr. Nesbitt?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Ms. Yanez, thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Nesbitt, your hearing will be conducted in two phases. In phase one, we determine if you violated the conditions of community supervision, and in phase two, we determine if your supervision should be reinstated or revoked. So I'm going to read these two allegations to you, Mr. Nesbitt, and as I read those to you, I'm going to ask you to tell me if they're true or false. And if you believe an allegation is false, we'll take testimony from Department of Corrections, and we can talk about that a little bit. But then the board will make the final determination as to whether you violated your conditions. So do you understand that process?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So we'll start phase one of your hearing, and I'm going to read these two allegations to you. And here they are. The first one is that you violated the conditions of supervision and had lapsed or probably about to lapse into criminalizer company by violating condition number 5, demonstrated by your refusal to leave a place of business on or about October 5th, 2017. Mr. Nesbitt, is that true or false?
False.
Okay. And allegation number 2 is that you violated condition number 5 as demonstrated by threatening to commit a new crime in order to be arrested and returned to prison on or about October 5th, 2017. Is that true or false, Mr. Nesbitt?
False.
False? Okay. All right. Well, since you've said those are both false, we are going to take some information from the Department of Corrections. And Mr. Sanders.
Violation one, on or about October 5th, 2017, Prescott Valley Police Department were called to Fry's Food and Drug Store located at 3100 Glass Ford Hills Road in Prescott Valley regarding a subject refusing to leave the store. The store manager had been trying to convince a subject identified as offender Randy Nesseth to leave the store because it was time for them to close. Offender refused to leave, police were called. Offender appeared to be experiencing anxiety and paranoia. Offender reported he ran away from his halfway house and insisted he wanted to be arrested and returned to custody for parole violation. Despite arrival of law enforcement on the scene, offender refused to leave.
Okay, Mr. Sanders, let me check on that one. So, Mr. Nesseth, what's not true about that allegation?
The store is open 24/7, it's Walmart. But besides that, I did tell the clerk to get a hold of, that I wanted to turn myself in for, I violated my parole, and that I will be outside the store, and they did do that.
Okay, now let me clarify something though, because this says this was a Fry's, and you said Walmart.
Yes, the Fry's, yeah, I was at Walmart before that.
Okay,
yes, sir.
So you're just remembering Walmart. Okay, I think the Fry's probably does close, it's not a 24/7, and the store manager had told you that it was time to close. So that's why they were asking you to leave.
Okay, I'm probably thinking of the Walmart once again.
Okay, so this is really true then, that they did ask you to leave and you didn't want to leave?
No, I asked them to call the police, I violated my parole, and they did exactly that. When the police officers came, they told me that that the people inside the store, that they didn't want to press charges, they didn't want to give me no trespassing or nothing. They told me that I was polite to them, I was not disrespectful, you know, I just notified them to call the police that I violated my parole. They did ask me to leave the police didn't come for like 20 minutes,
okay.
So I was still there. So, you know, during that 20 minutes, they did ask me to leave, but, you know, I told them, I said, hey, I'm waiting for them to come, you know, and they took a while to get there.
Okay, all right, understood. Mr. Sanders, could you read around that allegation number two?
On about 10/5/17, again, Prescott Valley Police were called to the Fry's Food and Drug Store located at 3100. Glassfield Hills Road in Prescott Valley regarding subject identified as Randy Nesseth, refusing to leave the store. Offender reported he believed people were after him, trying to kill him, and appeared to be experiencing anxiety and paranoia. Offender reported he ran away from his halfway house and insisted he wanted to be arrested and returned to custody for a parole violation. Police tried to convince offender to seek help for his mental health issues. He refused and stated he was going to go into the store and commit a crime if that's what it took for him to be arrested. In the follow-up, Department of Corrections staff were contacted in Prescott Valley and Prescott Valley Police, and the decision was made to return the offender to custody. Prior, I cannot find any violations that had constituted a warrant for his arrest out of the Prescott Valley parole office until this
incident. Okay. All right, so Mr. Nesseth, on allegation number two, that you were threatening to commit a new crime in order to be arrested, did you do that?
No.
You did not?
No. I have mental health issues. Everything else that he stated is correct. I was having a lot of panic attacks when I was out there in the streets, and, you know, I was very overwhelmed, and, you know, there's a lot of different issues going on, you know. My first day out, you know, my son tried to kill himself like a week prior. You know, there was other, you know, every day I was doing something, you know, the first day I went to the DMV to get my license. The second day, and I checked in with my PO. The second day I went to the DES office. The third day I went to Social Security office. The fourth day I went to the courts to deal with my restitution and fines like my PO instructed me to. But every day I was doing something. Every day I was on the move, and I was very overwhelmed. I was very stressed out. You know, there's personal issues going on with my son, and I didn't know how to deal with it. And
okay. Okay, Mr. Nesseth, just if you can just hold on 1 second, I need to close out phase one of the hearing, and then we'll move to phase two, and then you can tell us all of that. We've already heard what you said. So based on information in warrant number 2017W3433 and testimony from the Department of Corrections concerning these two allegations and follow-ups, I move to find Mr. Nesseth delinquent as he violated the terms and conditions of supervision and may have lapsed or have lapsed into criminal ways or company.
Second.
Agree.
Thank you. All right, hold on 1 second, Mr. Nesseth, I have paperwork to fill in here.
Just to be clear, when the officer called his supervisor to verify if I violated my parole, my parole was not violated, but then, you know, we're talking back and forth, and I assumed they were talking to my PO, and they told me that that I needed to go to CRS to be evaluated, you know, for my mental health issues, and I did refuse, and then, you know, we started talking back and forth, and we kept going back and forth, you know, and like I said, I was having a panic attack during this time, and, you know, so at the end of the conversation, I agreed to go to CRS for evaluation, and they put me in the back of the car, and we were driving to CRS in Prescott Valley, and then the officer pulled over on the side of the road, and he took me out from the back of the car, and he handcuffed me, and I was like, hey, man, what's going on? And he said, hey, he said, we're not going to CRS, I gotta take you to the county jail. I guess they put a warrant out for your arrest. And I told him, I said, well, call your supervisor and tell him that we're going to CRS like they wanted me to go. And he said, it's too late for that. They already put a warrant out for your arrest. There's nothing I could do. So
okay.
I was like,
okay. Understood, Mr. Ness. Now, are you feeling okay today?
Yes, I'm feeling okay. When I came back to prison, they put me on the yard.
Okay.
And I am, you know, I'm coming out with a lot of people, and I have, like, I've been in maximum custody for 11 years straight. So, you know, I'm very antisocial, and you know, I don't like to be around a lot of people. But when I came back to prison right now, when I violated my parole, they put me on the yard, and you know, I guess I'm learning how to deal with being around a lot of people. You know, and
right.
Madam Chair, can I get some testimony from?
Yes, oh, I'm sorry. And by the way, Mr. Nesseth, we're moving to phase two of your hearing now, so we've already completed phase one. We're on phase two. Mr. Sanders.
Yes, Mr. Nesseth was released on 9/27 of 2017 from the date of arrest of 10/5 of 2017 by the Prescott Valley Police Department on the noted charges with the aforementioned allegations. He was back in DOC custody on 10/6 of 17 with a current CSED of 4/27 of 2018. 0 days reflected. His current conviction in 2013 is a misconduct involving weapons, receiving 4.5 years. Prior convictions in 2005, a burglary first degree, receiving 8 years. 2011, aggravated assault, receiving 1.5 years. Second term in DOC. CMIR score was a 4-4, mental health score of a 3, substance abuse score of a 1. He's a suspected New Mexican Mafia member, Arizona. Prior terms of supervision in 2012 was the TIS release. Arrested on his current offense and revoked by the BOEC. He has a significant disciplinary history with drugs, threats of violence, weapons, and assault on staff noted. Other arrest information. 1996, burglary third degree, Arizona juvenile probation. 96, aggravated robbery, Arizona juvenile probation. 96, burglary violation, Arizona juvenile probation. 97, aggravated assault, Arizona juvenile detention. 98, aggravated criminal damage, Arizona juvenile probation. Is a G8 V9 score. That is all.
Thank you.
I'd like to make note also before I get away.
Please.
From this is his. He was approved for a case transfer from the Tucson office and scheduled to report to the Prescott office 5 days after this occurrence. He was already transferred with a pending date of 10-10 for a scheduled report date at the Prescott office, and he never made it.
Right.
And the manager was contacted during this event, and the decision was made to return him to custody.
Right. Okay, thank you, sir.
All right, so Mr. Nessa, it looks like you were originally approved to stay with your mother in Tucson, but then you had just transferred, as Mr. Sanders just explained, you had just transferred to Prescott when this happened.
Yes, I was promoted to Tucson, and me and my family talked, and we decided they gave me money, and they found me a place to stay in Prescott Valley so that I could change my life and,
sure.
You know, stay away from the gangs and not talk to any of my old friends, and that's why I went down to Prescott Valley.
And was Bud's transitional living, was that a pretty small place? Is it just a few people there?
No, there was like...
It's pretty big.
Yeah, there was 8 people living in the house. And
8 people?
Yes.
Okay, all right. That sounds like a good size for you. What, were you employed at all, sir?
When I got to Bud's halfway house, they were going to give me a job moving furniture in and out of houses, like people that are moving, you know, we go to the house, we pack up their stuff, and we take it. And I was working for like 2 days before this happened.
Okay, all right, good. Well, that's good news like that. It looks like you were referred for random drug testing. I'm not sure, did you ever submit a urine test, a urine specimen while you were on supervision?
No, what happened was when I went out, you know, as soon as the first day I talked to my people, I told them what our plans were, you know,
right.
And I told them that we're looking for a house, so he had to verify that this halfway house was approved through DOC, and my PO told me that he wasn't going to, because I was going to be going to Prescott Valley the next week, once he was done doing all the paperwork to have my parole transferred, Aguilar told me that he's not going to have me do UAs. He's going to let my PO in Prescott Valley deal with that.
Okay, sure.
Because, mm-hmm. So the following week, he got all the paperwork done, and I went back to the parole office, and I signed the paperwork, and then I went to Prescott Valley. And the reason I didn't check in with my PO at Prescott Valley is because I had this panic attack. I had this issue, so I, you know, I just, in my mind, it was like, the only thing, I felt safe going back to prison, you know, being locked up.
Right. And you already told us you did a lot of things. You got a driver's license and you were getting around and getting stuff done. So,
yes.
And that was all good. That was a good thing. Mr. Nessa, it looks like you've had some problem with drugs. In the prison, I think you've had some discipline for drugs. Do you use drugs? What drug do you use?
In 12 years, I've had one issue with drugs, and that was 2 years ago.
Okay.
I do, when I'm very sad and depressed and or angry, when I'm feeling really down in my life, then that's when I turn to drugs.
Okay, and which drug in particular? Is there one that you like, that you use more?
Meth.
Okay, so methamphetamine. And had you used any meth while you were on community supervision? You only have a few days.
No.
No meth? Okay. All right. And have you been able to get any treatment? What kind of drug programs or treatment or any kind of programs have you met?
Well, when I was released, I signed, me and my mom, we've been looking into clinics and centers for rehab, and but I had to, they only had enough money to give me so that I could move out of town and find a place to stay. They didn't have no money to put me in a rehab and pay for my housing.
Right.
Because the Bud's Halfway House, they charged us $700 up front before I moved in, and that was for the first month's rent.
Okay.
So I got a medical health insurance at the PO office.
Okay.
Medicare.
Okay.
So my mom was telling me that that they approved it, and they approved my Medicare. So my PO was talking to my mom, and they have a center where I could go. They have a center where I could go, and my health insurance, it'll pay for rehabilitation. So, I have that to look forward to when I get out, if I get out,
Okay, understood. All right, I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions for you, Mr. Nelson. Mr. Johnson?
Sir, are you taking medications now, your own medications?
Yes.
Okay, were you on medications when you were out, or were you taking your medications when this incident started, or were you off your medications?
I was taking my medications, but I'm supposed to go to CRS and have them re-diagnose me and give me new medication, because right here in DOC they don't give you medication for panic attacks. They don't give you medication for being semi-bipolar. Their medication that they give you here in DOC is very limited. So that's one thing that I have to do when I go out there.
Okay, so Mr. Nelson, when you were at the Fry store when the police came, what was it that caused your panic attack while you were there? What do you know what triggered that?
I think it was the halfway house. Sometimes I know what triggers it and sometimes I don't, but now that I look back at the situation, I think what triggered it is, I was there in Prescott Valley, I have no family, I have no friends, I'm trying to call my mom and she's not answering the phone, and the doors were unlocked and all the windows in the house were open, and I'm in the house with all these strangers, these guys, and I don't know what their intentions are, and I believe that's what that was a trigger of my panic attack, and I couldn't sleep all that night, and then the next day, I couldn't come off of it,
Okay, let me ask you one more question, sir. So, do you want to be in prison, or do you want to try to get yourself some help and get stabilized?
No, I need help. I didn't know how bad my issues was,
Okay.
Because I'm here and I'm locked up.
But sir, let me ask you a question. Okay, listen to me. Do you want to try to get some help, or do you want to be in prison? You told the officers when you got arrested you wanted to go back to prison.
No, I mean, I need to get some help. I need to deal with my issues and I need to try to start my life.
Is that what you want to do?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Nassif, don't worry. Do you have any questions now? Okay. We have a couple of people. We have your mother on the phone, and I just was given a paper that says we have your aunt. Oh, good. Okay. We have your aunt present here, too.
She needs to be sworn in.
But she needs to be sworn in, right. So, Ms.
No, she can set that.
So. Yeah, you can state it. Ms. Raina, do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, do you so affirm? Thank you very much. Who would like to go first? Ms. Yanez, would you like to give the board information?
Yes, I would really much appreciate it.
Okay, please go ahead.
And only because I have a very urgent pending appointment that I couldn't cancel.
Okay, sure.
I have to be there by 10:30.
Oh, okay.
Can you state your full name, ma'am, and if you don't mind?
My full name is Caroline T. Yannis, and I am the mother of Rand Nesset.
Okay, and what would you like the board to know?
I'm sorry, it's kind of like an echo on the phone here.
What would you like to tell the board?
I'm sorry?
She asked you, what would you like to tell the board at this time, ma'am?
I would like to tell the board the 8 days that my son was out, and I wanted to tell you my ride to hell and back. During this time, my son was pending approval when he got out. He was pending approval to go to Prescott, so he came to stay with me. The first few days that he would share with me, he was fine. He was helpful. He would help me do things without being asked. My other kids that are grown, I have to ask him, and he wasn't that way. I could see he was very eager to try to learn new things, like the computer and his phone and things like that. And he would pick up on things really fast, and he understood it. But I also saw that he, at times, would become very quiet, and he would come and stand close by me or just put his arm around me. And I kind of figured that I knew that those points, times, and I asked him about it, he was having real high anxiety and close to nearly panic attack. Among his brothers and sisters, which he has five of them, sometimes he would laugh in the conversation and be a part of the conversation. Sometimes he would become very quiet and kind of withdrawn. And that was because he said he didn't have those close family ties since he's been in prison for so long, that interaction. He didn't have the stories to tell. He couldn't relate to the stories that they were telling. And so it was just those first couple of days that he was out. It was also a learning curve, because he didn't know how my coffee pot worked. He went to Walmart, he didn't know there was no faucet. He didn't know how to turn on the water to rinse his hands off. You know, there was things like that going on the first couple of days. Are you guys still there?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so then on the third day, because I've been documenting all this, I've written a lot of things down. On the third day, gets a phone call from his son that there's people in his past from 12 years ago that found out he was out and that they were out looking for him. His son calls him up and tells him this. All of a sudden, my son turns from this person to having paranoia. I have to close all my curtains, lock all my doors. We were deciding what to do. I called his PO at this point, and I told him what was going on. I asked his PO, Aguilar. I told him, my son lives not too far from here. It's kind of an isolated area, rural area. He doesn't get involved with anybody. You know, he's clean. He's a good person, my son. And you know what? I feel safe enough to take him over there and keep him safe. So I don't know these people that we're looking for. I'm not involved in any of that. I don't know them. They don't know me. But my son felt that if they went to my daughter, because they know my daughter, that they would put pressure on my daughter and they would come looking for him here, that my daughter would stay where I live. So at that point, I made the choice to take him over there to keep him safe because I saw his paranoia becoming getting very paranoid. So I took him over there to his mother's house. During this time, he was constantly calling me. Every day, he was helping his brother move. His brother was moving from Tucson over to South, and I figured that he would go to work and maybe get his mind off of things and stuff like that. And it did at times, but then when they stopped working, he was on his phone constantly calling me, you know. And I would tell his, I was in constant communication with his PO during this time as well, and telling them, look, did we have gotten the okay from Prescott so we can take Randy up there, you know? She needs to go, you know? So then he was there with his brother for a few days. His brother ended up moving to South a couple of days later. Then my son ended up on my sister's doorstep. My sister said that when he arrived there, that she felt very heartbroken and very saddened because of the way she saw him. She saw that he was just a broken person, like a spirit, like he was in so much fear of these people that his spirit was broken. He was like literally broken. She ended up going to go and rent a hotel for him. And Randy called me from that hotel. And this was on the sixth night. But prior to that, I had been talking to the PO and the PO supervisor and asking them, where can I take my son? And I have been trying to find places. Where can I take my son? Can you help me out here? He's going through this. He needs help mentally. He needs this. He needs that. I don't know what to do for him. And their response was like, well, you know what? We're just trying to hurry up and get him approved to go to Prescott. And that was their response in the beginning. On the sixth day, when my son called me and my sister took him to the hotel, that night my son called me, and he was about 10 o'clock at night. He called me and he was so desperate. He was in so much fear that I could hear. He was sobbing from the depths of his heart. He had it 7 days. He had it eaten right. He couldn't even move. He was literally paralyzed, even though he was moving physically. His brain was stuck in that fear and that paranoia. And she called me and he was so desperate. He said, Mama, I'm so tired. I don't know what to do. And he said, I'm so scared, Mama. And he goes, can you come and stay with me? And at this time, I told him, I'm scared of you, Randy, because at some point during this time, he came to believe that I was trying to lure him and working with those people that were out trying to get him. And I wasn't. And I became scared of myself. I told him, Randy, I'm scared of you. I want to go over there to prove to you that I'm with you and I'm on your side, but at this point, you're stronger than me. And I'm very scared of you. I said, I fear for my life. And he goes, Mama, he goes, so please, you have to come. He said, and he was crying from the depths of his heart. And he told me, so I woke up by my, he goes, Mama, he goes, if you come and you stay here with me, he said, they're not going to come looking for me if you're here. They're not going to do nothing to me in front of you. So at this point, I woke up my husband. It was about almost midnight by this time. And said, you know what? I won't call it alone. So he goes, let's go. So we drove to the hotel. When we get to the hotel, He had the door propped open. We had to wait for him to move the desk out of the door. When we got there, when we got into the room, my husband helped him prop the desk up to the door with the TV there. And all night long, the rest of that night, my son, my husband and myself lay in bed. My son sat on the floor looking at the doorknob to see if it moved all night long. And any kind of movement in that old rickety hotel, which we were on the second floor, any little creak, he would say, "Mama, they're out there. They're out there. Do you hear that?" And I would say, "Randy, that's just the hotel creaking." All night long, I was up like that, and I could feel his fear. I could see it, his anxiety, his paranoia. I couldn't even sleep. My husband got up, he took him his clothes, he went to work that day. That day, I took him to his PO office. His PO told me, "Bring him in. He's got a verbal okay for you to take him to bed stop, and I want to talk to Randy." I said, "Okay." But prior to that, I had talked to his PO, and his PO told me, Aguilar told me, a couple of days before this incident, his parole officer told me that him and his supervisor had listened in on conversations with Randy. Randy had called him, and his supervisor happened to be there, and they both listened in to the conversation, and he told me that they had agreed that Randy was in extreme paranoia.
So Ms. Giannis,
and this was 2 days before this hotel incident.
Right.
So on that day, and I had, mind you, been in contact every day with them, been in contact with them, and there were times when I would get so overwhelmed that I would try to call an emergency number in the evening to just talk to them. And sometimes if they didn't return my calls that day, I would try to call again later on that evening. And my thought is, I'm trying to help my son, trying to keep him safe, but at the same time, trying to help him mentally with the paranoia and the anxiety and the fear that he was going through.
Ma'am, I think you can hear me a little better than you can the chair at this time, but I think she wants to know if the board might have any questions for you.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so please go ahead, Madam Chair.
Ms. Jones, I understand this must have been very terrifying. Has your son had prior maybe hospitalizations or mental health treatment?
I'm sorry?
Has he had prior hospitalizations or mental health treatment?
Not prior to him going into, I guess he has ADHD as a child.
Okay.
But I know that since he's been in prison and has been there in prison and has been in maximum security for 12 years now,
right.
I know that his mental status has changed, being in a room 23 hours a day by himself.
So when he was growing up, he did not have these issues?
I'm sorry?
When he was growing up, he did not have mental health issues.
You know what, there really is an echo. Don't speak louder, just speak maybe a little bit slower.
Ma'am, she's saying when he was growing up, he did not have these type issues, these psychological issues. That was the question that she was asking you.
No, he did not.
Okay.
But I don't know if during this time, if he did do any drugs or not. I personally don't know. I don't know if, I know that me and his PO had talked and we said, well, what if he was doing drugs and it heightened the paranoia?
Madam Chair, may I ask the question?
May I ask you a question, ma'am?
You had indicated that he thought that somebody was coming for him, and you had indicated that his father had made contact, or perhaps had made contact, or those people had made contact with him. You say you did not know who those people were. Do you suspect that that was the Mexican mafia that he was perhaps had been associated with at some other point in his life?
Well, prior to his release, and I talked to the PO. The PO had told me, it wasn't Aguilar, it was another PO in that office, because Aguilar, I didn't know that Aguilar at that point wasn't going to be his PO. Another parole officer's office told me that according to the DOC system, that there is a shit out on my son from the Mexican Mafia. But I didn't, he wasn't in the Mexican Mafia prior to him getting into prison.
Okay.
And when they went looking for him at my grandson's house.
Since you can hear me better than you can hear the chair, I'm just going to see if Honorable Mr. Johnson might have some questions for you.
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay, can we now just go to the next witness, please, ma'am?
Miss,
if you can just hold on, Miss Yannick, and
she has an appointment.
Okay, well, you have an appointment. I'm sure you'll hear the results, but thank you so much for your participation, and we're going to move on with the hearing at this time.
Can I just say something very briefly?
Yes, ma'am, very briefly. Yes, ma'am.
I just want to say that my son, I could see even throughout all this that my son was trying to exercise a lot of self-control by not going and committing another crime. I could see, and he even told me that, where he said he was going to turn himself in, and which he did. And he said, Mama, he was just so scared. But I could also see when he wasn't in that fearful state, when he was in a safe place, he was helpful. He asked all the right questions. He helped out. He was eager to learn. He did show those things, but it wasn't until that fear came in. But I do want to make a recommendation. I have talked to the PO here. He does have health insurance. I have his health insurance card. I talked with Randy. I talked with the PO. There's a rehab center here in Tucson where they also will help him. There's a psychiatrist on site.
Ma'am, do you have the name of that unit?
No, the parole office said that they have all that, and if you guys make that recommendation, they would get him in there.
Okay, well, thank you so very much, and for time management purposes.
That's what I request is that if I don't want my son to stay in prison until he finishes off his sentence and just be let out. I want him prior to that, because he only got till March, to be asked to go to a treatment center and to get help for his drug and mental health problems. And I do have numbers now where he can call at any given time, a mobile clinic, mobile health crisis clinic. Just call on the phone if he wants to talk.
Okay, well, thank you so much, ma'am. The chair, the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse will continue with the hearing. And so thank you so very much for your participation, and we know that you have to leave for another appointment.
Yes.
But thank you
so very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thanks, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Raina, would you like to come up to the podium?
Yeah, I'll be brief.
Okay, thank you. If the green light is not on there, it's on. Good. Thank you. Could you please state your name?
Maria T. Reina.
Thank you. And what would you like to tell the board?
I'm Randy's aunt. I'll try and be as brief as possible. I just want to state that Randy was incarcerated as a juvenile. He's been in the system. Basically, he's institutionalized. The correctional facilities do not take attention to the people that have mental issues, people that have depression, anxiety, as he mentioned. Being in isolation has escalated all this mental issues going on. He can be a productive member of society with the proper help. That was never addressed. He was released all three times, for a minimum of 6 months, only because he didn't know how to live out in the real world. Come, here we are 12 years later, a lot changes for a person that's incarcerated for 12 years. And it wasn't steady 12 years. He's been gone from the family since he was 15, from juvenile straight to prison. In prison, he learned many bad habits. Okay, he may have dabbled with small drugs out, you know, as a 15-year-old, never in gangs or anything. All that was introduced to him in prison. He was never given a fair chance from any end, from our end, correctional facility or anything. He has it in his head and he has it in his heart and he's ready, but he needs help with the proper psychology, medication, counseling, something to help him along to work, give him that little push, that little hand, helping hand. And the family support is there, but I'm not trying to point blame either in the correctional facilities, but that has a lot to do with it. And there's a lot of things going on in society right now with the mental issue too. And people are losing it because they never got the proper care, you know, was never addressed.
Okay. Ms. Reina, do you know, has he ever been diagnosed SMI? I mean, there's nothing indicated here.
As he indicated, it was diagnosed even in prison.
Okay.
As an adolescent, he was only diagnosed with ADHD. That's about it.
All right. And do my fellow board members have any questions?
No.
No? Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Reina.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, Mr. Nessa, we're coming toward the conclusion of your hearing, and we'd like to give you the opportunity to make a final statement. Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Nessa, you said that you spent the majority of your time in isolation?
Yes.
Why were you in isolation the majority of your time?
Well, I joined the prison gang right here, and when they asked you to see me, they keep you in isolation the rest of your time. But I renounced my membership in 2010, and I'm not involved in the prison gang no more, and that's why they have me on the hit list, and they threatened my life.
Okay, thank you, sir.
All right. So, Mr. Nesseth, is there anything else you'd like to tell the boards before we come to the conclusion of your hearing, but without repeating something you've already told us?
The last year I got out of prison, I had a job. I was a pod porter here for 9 months, and then I got released out to the streets. You know, I'm a hard worker. I know how to work. I know how to keep my job. I know how to follow the rules. My last 3 years in prison, I have not received a disciplinary ticket. You know, I've been behaving. I've been following the rules. When I get out to the streets, if you guys let me out, you know, I know where my issues are, and you know, I got my health insurance approved. My PO has a rehab center, and with the health insurance, it pays for my rehabilitation. I need to go there. You know, I need to go to CRS. I need to talk to a psych. I need to get on different medications that will help my panic attacks. I need to. Once I'm done dealing with that, then you know I plan on going back to work. I plan on going back to the place where I worked. I was on the streets in 2013 the last time, and I was working at a construction lumber warehouse, and I plan on going back over there because they know me, and if they're looking for a worker, they're more than likely going to hire me. I have a lot of work. History experience before I came to prison, so I know what my issues are, and my I have my family support and my POs. He has resources for me, and I need to deal with my issues. And you know, when I was released the last time, I didn't know how bad my issues were, and I was very overwhelmed and I was stressed out, you know. And besides what I'm going through, you know, my son is 17 years old and he tried to kill himself a week prior. So, you know, I had too much to deal with, and, you know, I didn't tell my mom. I didn't tell my mom, hey, you know, I'm getting stressed out. Hey, all this stuff is stressing me out. Hey, I'm overwhelmed. I didn't talk to her. I didn't say nothing. I just kept it inside myself. And now I know that when I get back out to the streets, I can't do that. When I get overwhelmed, I need to tell her. If I get stressed out, I need to tell her. You know, if, I need to keep communication with my family because I was just holding it all in and, you know, it was becoming too much for me.
Okay, Mr. Nessa, thank you very much. The board is going to go into discussion, and we discuss everything in the open. Everything's public under the open meeting law. So if you just stay on the phone there, you can certainly listen in, and we'll be back with you in just a moment. Okay, Mr. Nessa?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, hold on the line. The board is now in discussion. Mr. Nessa, this is clearly an individual that's in need of some help, mental health treatment, support, had gone from the completely secure environment of everything locked up, you know, being in a completely secure concrete facility to where he was living in a group home where there were only 8 people, windows open, doors open. That really bothered him, and I understand that from coming from that background. In addition to the gang, the complication of the gang involvement, he does have health insurance, so that would help. I'm really wanting some input from my fellow board members. Obviously, he would be safe if he was in prison. He would be safe, but it's probably not going to address his mental health issues, which is what he really needs, is to have that addressed. So he did not abscond. He was trying to turn himself back in the best way he knew how in his state at the time. So I am looking for some wisdom from my fellow board members. Mr. Johnson.
I agree. I think he'd be better off getting out and getting some help. I think his PO was trying to work with him, but this incident just occurred where he had too much stress of arm. It appears, even in the report, it says that the manager of the store said he appeared to be in stress and a lot of anxiety when he was inside the store. It appears that they did have a rehab program for him in Tucson to actually go to. But this is a case where I think seriously that the young man needs the opportunity to get out and get involved and get into some rehab program. Hopefully that will help him out and be a productive citizen. According to his mom, when he wasn't stressed out or doing anything, he was asking questions and getting involved and relating to his family. But you know, he's been incarcerated for a long time in isolation, and he has some mental issues. He's SMI, he does have medical insurance. So I think he's taking all the steps that his family's doing, all the things that they can to try to assist and help him, but they maintain contact and relationship with the parole officer during the entire time that he was out. So I would be supportive of reinstating him on parole with some special conditions.
Right. And the other good thing is his sentence ending date is in April, so that gives a few months to get this going. I mean, in 5 months or so, that he'll still be under supervision. Dr. Wright, do you have any thoughts?
Yes, ma'am, I can live with that. But I still have the concern myself is whether he is ready to deal with the fact. I know that he's debriefed, and I really appreciate that. I think that's very important that he did debrief. But if the information is correct, and maybe it is not correct, that they were looking for him, I think that he's going to have to be very careful if he gets out where he is, and I guess I use the word the secrecy. We know when he is incarcerated, we know that he can be isolated, but in a house, will he be isolated? If these people who, according to his mother, have already contacted his father and possibly contacted his sister, if they're going to continue to be that aggressive, I just want him to be protected as well as members of society. Now, I'm very much interested in making sure that he is protected, and we don't know the name of the, well, we couldn't recommend that at any rate, but we don't know the name or the facility that his mother is recommending down in Tucson, but we could only go on the basis of where we are at this time, and I would be willing to go with you and Mr. Johnson, but I do want to say that we have to be very careful because his situation is a little complicated because he was previously a part of a gang, although he's now debriefed, and if he's still on that hit list, that's something that I'm concerned about. Thank you.
Yeah, agreed. It's very difficult. All right. Based on our discussion, the information in the warrant, particularly about the incident in Prescott Valley, where he exhibited unusual behavior, abnormal behavior, and testimony of his mother and his aunt, information from Mr. Sanders. I move to return Mr. Nesseth to community supervision. However, it has to be done in a very careful way. Obviously, the same conditions would apply, but there would also need to be a placement somewhere that there could be substantial mental health treatment, and preferably in a facility that's relatively secure. I'm not sure what that would be, but definitely mental health treatment, medications, participation in mental health treatment, so that would be the one. Medications. Probably UA as a part of that too, UA testing and revocation on the process to start on the first positive, diluted, missed, or unsuitable for testing or unexcused UA. But the significant part of this is the mental health treatment. And that would be my motion.
Second.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Okay, so we're going to continue. All right, so Mr. Nesseth, you heard the board's discussion. The board wants you to be successful and to be well and safe. And we voted to continue you on community supervision, provided with the same conditions you had before, but also to add that you must participate in a program and live in a place where you can have mental health treatment. Just like you said, you want to have a place where you can have somebody to talk to, where your medications are carefully managed. So participate in a successful completion of a program for mental health treatment. Participate, you need to participate, and I think you will, in your mental health treatment plan and your medications, and also that your parole officer will still be working with you, but will start the revocation process, the community supervision revocation, on the first UA that's missed, diluted, positive, unsuitable for testing, or unexcused if you don't deliver a specimen when you're required to do that. Do you think you can live with those conditions, Mr. Nesseth?
Yes. I spoke to my PO 3 weeks ago, Aguilar, through the CO3 right here, and he told me, because we were talking back and forth, and he told me that they would let me stay at the parole office at SAMHAC there until admitted into the rehab center that they have. And then I'll go to the rehab center and I'll start the process of getting help.
Okay, so you understand that it's very important to be in contact with your parole officer, to stay in very close touch with your parole officer. In the facility there, start working with your CO3, because it'll take a few days for this to process. But it's very important that your CO3 and your parole officer work together to find an appropriate place where you can be so that you can be well. And that's what we want for you. Okay, Mr. Nessa?
I had a question. Do you know when I would be released? That way I could know how much time I got to deal with my CO3?
Mr. Nessa, not exactly. I mean, Mr. Sanders might be able to give you a better estimate than I can.
The email will go out today. It should be between 5 and 7 days that he's released.
Okay. Did you have another comment?
Yes, I do. I just want to clarify on the department's behalf, listening to this hearing for liability purposes, that the placement is not at the PO's discretion. Is that correct? We have security concerns here that there's been talk of security concerns, and I don't want to place the department in a position where we're going to be responsible for maintaining security if we're going to put him back out in a placement where there is concerns for his safety or the safety of the staff.
The placement is at the PO's discretion?
No, I just wanted to clarify what the board decided. What was their decision? Because I did not hear at the PO's discretion.
No, I think it is. It's got to be at the PO's discretion because we don't know.
Likewise, I don't know if the department has a place that we can consider a secure facility that we can guarantee his safety.
Right, and that's understood.
That is a residential placement.
Right, if you're not running the place, then you can't guarantee his safety.
It's a
understand.
Placement, so I
understand. But if he's at the discretion of the parole officer, he could not be released until such place was identified.
Right.
I mean, I think that's the reason I didn't want to give him a time, because sometimes it takes a long time, as you know better than I do, for them to find a place. But I'm not part of the motion, but I do feel that it has to be at the PO's discretion.
Yes, and I have
and if the PO cannot find somewhere, then he will come back before this board again.
It sounds as though they had a place for him to actually go to, and the place would be at the PO's discretion. It sounds like
it still have to be investigated. Yeah,
right.
I just want to make sure.
And we'll have to make sure that it's
we're
a secure
not
place.
Responsible for it. Yep. Safe.
Right, but he said that he's on the open yard now, and he didn't express any fear now. He's in prison. He's not in.
We have some security. We have some control over his safety right now.
Right. Understood. Okay. All right. So, Mr. Nessa, thank you very much for participating in your hearing today. You've been very, very polite and respectful, and we appreciate that. We want to see you do well. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a nice day.
Thank you. This concludes your hearing, Mr. Nessa.
Thank you.